Welcome to the Industries in Motion podcast from RBC Capital Markets, where we take the time to explore what's new and what's next in today's fast-moving markets to help you stay ahead of the curve. My name is Peter Dawkins, and I'm the product manager here in London, UK. And I'm very happy today to be joined by Ben Toms, who leads up coverage of our UK banks universe. And we're going to have a multifaceted conversation today where we give Ben the opportunity to recap 2023, but importantly, look towards 2024 and dive a bit deeper into some of the key themes that he thinks will be important for the year, one of which is structural hedges. So I'm excited to get into that. Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
So with that, let's kick off and maybe we can start off with your kind of recap of the key themes of 2023.
Well, 2023 was a good year for UK banks. It was helped by rates moving off their floor and benign asset quality. In fact, the average ROTE for the sector was around 13%. And if we adjust for changes in capital, that compares to an average of 9% for the 3 years pre-financial crisis. Adjusting for those changes in capital is key, as the UK banks of today have an average CET1 ratio that's greater than 14%, and that's about 50% higher than a decade ago. Despite higher rates, net interest margins have fallen over the last 6 months, and that's largely due to deposit migration. However, it's worth placing this dynamic in a broader context. NIMs today are broadly in line with pre-financial crisis levels. Low levels of cost of risk have been supported by a number of factors. Those include low employment and leverage. Provision coverage, whilst down about 25% versus the 2020 peak, is still above the historical average. And bank macroeconomic assumptions, those are the ones that underpin impairment modelling, also remain conservative. Finally, we also have some more certainty around regulation. Basel 3.1 will be implemented in the UK in the first half of 2025. The impact on UK banks will range from a relatively neutral to a 10% uplift in risk-weighted assets. However, with the regulator's final paper due to be published in May, there is still some potential for a softening in some of those rules. Some banks have got so comfortable with the regulatory landscape that they've started reducing management capital targets. Despite greater stability and certainty, the implied cost of equity for UK banks has not fallen in line with a reduction in risk. The sector currently trades around 0.7 times book value, which, if you compare that to a valuation multiple in 2007 of 3 times, looks cheap.
That certainly sounds very cheap. And I think 2023 was clearly a very impactful year for banks and financials more broadly. And if we look forward to 2024, I wanted to start with something that you've written extensively about that you think could be, you know, a tailwind that perhaps not many investors have focused on as much as they should. And that's structural hedges. But it's also quite complicated. So maybe you can take a high level view of structural hedges and give us a bit of a theoretical understanding of what that means and why it's important.
There are many unknowns around UK banks over the next 12 to 24 months. The one thing we do have relative certainty around is the structural hedge. A very simplistic way of thinking about the structural hedge starts with the proposition that UK banks want both sides of their balance sheet to be interest rate sensitive, allowing management to concentrate on spread. However, a proportion of bank funding is not linked to SONIA. Banks utilize a book of interest rate swaps with a notional roughly equivalent to equity and current accounts to make their non-interest-bearing funding interest rate sensitive.
So now that we have kind of an understanding of the theory, do all banks use structural hedges or do all banks apply the structural hedges in the same way?
It's a good question. Most UK banks operate a passive approach to their structural hedge, not taking a view on rates. When an interest rate swap matures in the hedge, a new swap will be added in its place. We call this a caterpillar approach, with the bank only changing the size of the notional if they expect a rise or fall in current account balances. Some banks, though, take more of an active view on rates. They vary the size of the hedge notional based on our expectations of movements in swap rates. The market has traditionally been a bit more skeptical of this latter strategy, given the higher exposure to market movements.
You know, you've said that the RTE was much lower on the way up into a rising rate environment. So it sounds like it could be material. But if we see this unwind and we start to see, you know, falling rates, can you contextualize how important, you know, this might actually be for the banks in terms of RTE?
Structural hedges are material. They're a material contributor to banks' P&Ls. And in 2023, they represented about 25% of NII. We estimate that this will increase to about 45% by 2025, and that's based on the latest swap rates, and it's assuming about a 15% reduction in notionals versus their peak at the end of 2022. However, peak structural hedge income will only come between 2027 and 2029, and that will depend on each bank's deposit lifespan assumptions, which in turn determine the duration of the swaps they place into the hedge.
That's great. So it does sound like it is quite a material impact, and the tailwind has already really started as early as 2023. To what extent do you think the market understands and appreciates the potential of this tailwind?
I think whilst the market appreciates that it's one of the moving parts to the story in 2024, what's probably a little underappreciated is that this story continues to develop out to 2027 to 2029, depending on the bank.
That's really interesting, because this isn't just maybe a one-year tailwind. This could materialize into a 3 to 5 year tailwind. So that is very intriguing. You know, I think we've covered the structural hedges commentary. And if we continue to think about 2024, I know that you've flagged in the past that volumes and M&A are likely to be topical and important as well. Perhaps you can give us a high-level view starting on volumes and what that might mean in 2024.
Well, commentary through 2023 results suggested that banks are starting to see a little bit more life in the mortgage market. However, in terms of growth, this will likely come with a bit of a lag, which means that 2024 could really be a game of two halves. Mortgage rates, they're down from their peak in the summer of 2023 when they were around 6%. Nevertheless, refinancing is still painful for consumers who are typically rolling off a rate that was around 2% onto a rate that's kind of north of 4.5%. Whilst mortgage rates are significantly elevated versus recent history, it's worth remembering that from a UK bank's perspective, the profitability of a new mortgage is around 60 basis points spread over the five-year swap rate. And that's significantly down versus the 100 basis points profitability of mortgages rolling off the back book. This dynamic we call, as analysts, mortgage spread compression, and it will likely fade as we move through this year, as the next vintage of mortgages coming up for refinancing were written at spreads lower than that 100 basis points.
That's really interesting, because I think people mechanically always assume that higher interest rates immediately mean that a bank might benefit, but it's very intriguing to see why you might not see that immediate uplift. So we have a mixed story relating to volumes. What about M&A? I know there's been a lot of interest and a lot of thought given to this subject. So what's your view on M&A in 2024 for the sector?
Yeah, M&A is hugely topical in the UK banking space right now. There are about 336 banks operating in the UK today, and that's down around about 25% versus pre-financial crisis. And that number will likely drop by at least one more this year following Nationwide's offer for Virgin Money. And that transaction will actually forge the second largest bank in the UK with about a 16% share in the mortgage market and 11% share of deposits. And that's not the first transaction we've had this year either. We've had two following discussions, one between Coventry Building Society and Co-op Bank, and also Barclays announced their acquisition of Tesco Bank earlier this year. In our view, consolidation will likely to continue. And that's because unless you operate in a niche, banking is increasingly a scale game. Scale has in recent years required significant investment, particularly around tech. Just as a bit of context, bulge bracket investment banks are spending around 8 or 9% of their cost bases on tech investments each year. And that number is even higher at tier two investment banks, where the spend is around 12 to 13%.
I think that's really incredible. You know, I didn't necessarily appreciate the fact that there's more than 300 banks in the UK. And so it does apparently seem to be a sector in which consolidation is something that could be very likely to happen. So Ben, you know, we've covered 2023, we've covered structural hedges, volumes and M&A, and some of the key themes that you think will dominate 2024. Is there anything else that you would like to add to the discussion?
Well, it would be remiss of me not to mention the election in the UK, which will likely happen before the end of 2024. This is an area which we've done quite a lot of work on earlier this year. And surprisingly, the work that we've done suggests that elections aren't always bad for UK banks. But maybe that's something we can talk about further in another podcast.
Thanks very much, Ben. And having read the work, I can almost go so far as to say it could even be positive. So firstly, I want to say thank you for joining us today. It was great to get your insights on not just last year, but what you think is going to drive markets, UK banks markets, I should say, this year. And just a big thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
This content is based on information available at the time it was recorded and is for informational purposes only. It is not an offer to buy or sell or a solicitation, and no recommendations are implied. It is outside the scope of this communication to consider whether it is suitable for you and your financial objectives.